bang bang.
Hello and welcome to Fangbangers Podcast. We're chaotic horny friends rewatching the chaotic horny HBO series True Blood. I'm Elise.
And I'm Tasia. This week we're discussing season 1, episode 10, I Don't Want to Know. This episode originally aired November 9th, 2008. It was written by Chris Offutt and directed by Scott Winant. I don't know if I pronounced either of those names correctly. We're going on vibes. So sorry to those men if I did not.
I almost said the same thing. I was gonna, if you didn't say it, I was going to say sorry to those men. Little summary from Wiki. Caught in a compromising position, Sam shares a secret with an incredulous Sookie. Thinking she's been purged of her demon, Tara celebrates with Letty Mae, but goes off the deep end when she uncovers Miss Jeanette's true intentions. Sookie has a disturbing realization during Arlene and Renee's engagement party at Merlot's. Jason and Amy debate what to do with Eddie. Tara speeds into a bizarre roadside encounter that lands her in jail. I don't know that we had that part happen yet, which is kind of funny that it is.
Yeah, I was thinking the same. I was thinking the same when I read this earlier, looking over the notes. I was like, I think she just like went off road, like nothing else.
Clearly,
happened.
I didn't read this before putting it in the at a vampire tribunal to decide his fate. Bill faces a harsh penalty for his offense, but the magister decides on a more creative sentence involving a human teen named Jessica. My first thoughts on this episode are, yeah, fuck yeah, Jessica.
Yes, I am so excited for Jessica. Like, no spoilers, but she is one of my like top four characters in this entire show. I think it's like Eric, Lafayette, Pam, and Jessica. I would watch a show.
I think
with
those are
just,
my top four as
yeah,
well.
I would watch a show with just those four. That's all I want. That's all I want in this world.
Yeah, I'm in complete agreement. I know we say this almost every episode, but like so much happens in this episode. It's kind of insane.
This show really is so efficient. It's like there's not, and like what I like about it is that it gives you breathing room when you need breathing room. Like after Adele died, like we have that contemplative kind of episode where we get to like really unravel all the grief and everything. But like otherwise, it's like we have shit to do. Let's get this done.
Yeah,
and I appreciate that.
They're on a timeline,
right? There's never a dull moment, and they really know how to keep that like momentum going.
It's true. I was telling because I was watching this with Tessa, who's been on our podcast a couple times now. I was telling her last night when we were watching this. I was like, because I usually watch them twice. This time I only watched it once because I just didn't have time. Mm-hmm. But like it's so much easier to watch these episodes twice than it is my Deep Space Nine, like Star Trek. Like I love Star Trek, but like those episodes can be slow sometimes. So watching it twice might be a little tedious, but like this is like never a problem for me.
Yeah, same. I'm kind of rewatching, like as I rewatch this, I'm like going back and rewatching a little bit later because a friend of the pod, Jules, is watching for the first time. I don't know if they're listening to the podcast. I think they are. But
I think they are.
Yeah. So I'm watching with them to, like spoiler free, which is fun to kind of like get their first reactions.
Yeah, Jules told me you guys were watching together. I was
it's been really fun. So I'm like, and it's funny because our episodes like are banked, you know, so we record and the episodes that we record don't come out for like a month or whatever. So I'm kind of going back like several episodes ago to rewatch it again, which is fun because that way it's not like on top of each other, which can, you know,
even with
a fast moving show like this, maybe it could feel a little bit tedious, but
for sure.
Yeah, I'm getting like a little break and like recording the episode about it and then going back and watching with them, which is super fun.
I wanna join you sometime on that. I'm inviting myself.
You absolutely should. It has been really fun.
Awesome. Jules is the best. Yeah. She's coming to visit me in October, and I'm very excited about it.
That's really cool.
It's going to be great.
And Jelly.
I'm sorry. I would love for you to come too.
One day.
Yes. Yeah. I'm telling everyone, come to New York or Philadelphia. I will see you. if you do either of those things.
Like, this is totally off topic. We can edit this out later or whatever. But I am hoping to, like, I turned 39 in this October. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping for my 40th birthday to do, like, some sort of East Coast trip because I've never really been to the East Coast other than Florida, which doesn't count.
No, Florida doesn't count for anything.
Right, exactly. So I'm hoping to do, like, a big East Coast kind of deal, which I feel so like would be really fun in October, like Halloween-y, like...
Yeah,
and see, like,
it'll
fall
be very Tasia.
And, yeah, right. I know. Originally, my plan was to do...
You can peep some trees.
Yeah, exactly. My plan originally was to do New Orleans, and then Taylor Swift announced a show there that weekend, which, like, I was like, that's the perfect way to spend my 40th birthday. But then I got waitlisted for tickets, and I was like, well, fuck.
Aww,
which too. I don't want to go to the city without seeing Taylor Swift because it's going to be swamped with, like, people.
Yeah.
But
you want to be part of it. I get
exactly,
it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Is this where I humbly brag that I did get to see her, but, like,
I put
no effort into it? One of my good friends got tickets and, like, was so happy to have another Taylor Swift, fan come with her. And I was just like, I can't afford this. And she was like, don't worry. And I'm like, okay, but I'll pay for parking and all of our food and drink, like, that day.
Yeah.
I felt so bad. But, like, we had the best fucking time ever.
I mean, that feels like a good trade-off anyway. Because really, like, and you know what? If I had the money to do stuff like that, I would not give a shit if my friends didn't have money. I would be like, I am paying for your company, basically.
I was really upfront about it at first. Mm-hmm. Like, I wasn't going to. Although another friend did something similar in a month or so, we're going to go see Boy Genius.
Fun. Yeah, I just saw Boy Genius earlier this month. They came here, which was like a shock because nobody comes here.
Yeah.
It's fucking Montana.
I'm really excited. I expect it's going to be the gayest thing I've ever been to.
It was so gay. Like, literally. And I live in Montana, which is like very red state, very like.
Yeah,
not queer friendly necessarily, and I swear to God, every queer person in this entire state was at this show, and it was just such
a
vibe. It was the best.
I can't wait.
Yeah,
my show's at Madison Square Garden in New York City, and I just think it's going to be like insane.
Yeah,
this
see
is
that
really,
makes it
really
even crazier
topic.
That they played.
But I think it's going to be great. I think
they played
it's,
here
I think
in
it's,
Montana in the tiniest venue. Like it's
yeah,
that's awesome.
So like, I still can't believe that they're going to play Madison Square Garden. Like it doesn't, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah,
like for them to be like at an arena, I feel like they're trolling me.
It's you know, it's the pure power of Phoebe Bridgers.
Yeah.
Like, really, that's what it is.
Yeah. It's going to be wonderful. I'm so excited.
I love all of them. But, yeah, she's got, like, the celebrity behind her to make that stuff happen.
Yeah.
You know?
She's the one I know the most of the three of them.
Yeah.
Music is good.
Anyway, we have a True Blood episode we watched. We should probably
have you ever watched True Blood?
it rings a bell.
I bet Phoebe Bridgers loves True Blood.
I mean, anyone with taste, right?
Yeah. Anyone that wears, like, skeletons on their outfit.
Right.
Right. True Blood. So, a bunch of things happen. I kind of separated this into, like, things that happen rather than going, like, throughout the way it happened in the episode. So, let's start off with Sam's a shapeshifter.
Wild.
I did enjoy that we got more than just, I'm a shapeshifter. Like, we did get a lot of background information on Sam.
Yeah, I feel like that's been building up over the last couple of episodes.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of stuff has been seeded that we can talk later in the spoiler section. But yeah, it's been very well seeded throughout this entire season, really.
Yeah, and I like that they do this because... Even, like, we got flashbacks of Bill, like, a few weeks ago, and it's just, I like when they just show us, like, the person's perspective on themselves, really, because it's their point of view, and it's really nice. But Sam's childhood was not very nice. He was adopted, and once his family basically found out that he was a shapeshifter, they ditched him. They moved houses without telling him, and he came home
literally
and everything is gone in the house except for his I'm so glad they left his bedding for him.
That is, it's terrible. Literally the most insane thing to do, to like just pick up your entire life and move it while your kid's like at school. Like, why? Yeah. Why is that how you would handle it? Like, why not? I don't know. Like, kick, you know, if you're going to be an ass, like, kick the kid out. Like, why would you, like, put yourself through the inconvenience? Just from, like, a logistical standpoint, why would you put yourself through
and that? And a financial standpoint.
Yeah, it's insane. It's a movers batshit crazy cheap thing to do. Yeah.
I really hated how Suki reacted to this news. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't hate how she reacted to there's a naked man in my bed that I did not invite to be here. That was fine. But she acted as if she had a right to know his private information in a way that really bothers me.
And I think he put it really well.
Because he had tried to kiss... Yeah, because yeah. I guess because, you know, they'd known each other a long time. He tried to kiss her that one time or whatever, and so she felt like she's owed this information, and I'm just like, fuck you, honestly.
Yeah, she's acting really shitty and entitled. She's, I mean, number one, she's being a giant hypocrite, and yeah. like some of these supernatural creatures are okay, but not you, because you didn't give me this very privileged, very sensitive information. Like, you're not entitled to that just because you kissed once.
Yeah. And she doesn't tell everyone her secrets.
Yeah, it's, and like, it's not like it's a communicable disease. Like, it's not like
yes. He's... doesn't have HIV, darling.
Exactly, it's that he's, like, dribbling contagious. His blood into you. You know what I mean? Like, it's not... Yeah. She's acting like a real dick about this, and I think he puts it really well later on at the engagement party where... Sorry, I have like a hair in my mouth. Where
is it from, Luna?
Probably, yes. That's like I probably eat like 5 pounds of Luna for a week. but he puts it really well at the engagement party later when he says, like, I didn't want to tell you because I didn't trust you. I trusted my own instincts, and my instincts were yeah. right about how she would yep. react. And you see her yeah. react to that of kind of like, oh, it's like, yeah, bitch, like, you're being an asshole.
She, like, was being an asshole to
this
everyone.
This is
whole
not
episode.
A good, like, not to jump right into Suki, but this is a bad Suki episode. Like, she, number one, she goes to work and somebody says good morning to her, and she's like, nothing about this morning, you know, like she's being yeah. a,
I actually,
a real ass.
I used to have a coworker that would say that, like, when you come in the morning, like, good morning. What's good about the morning? And I'm just like, fuck off.
Like leave your fucking attitude. You know, like, you don't need yeah. to infect other people with, like, I get you don't want to be at work. You're having a bad day. That's fine. But, like, to project that onto, like, ruin other people's day for it. What really makes me mad is at the engagement party when she offers to go get ice or whatever because she's like, I need a break from this anyway. Yeah. Like, to, like, that is Arlene's engagement
party. To the guest of honor. Like, that was
and
so fucked up.
It is
up.
So fucking rude. It is, it's straight up yeah. just, like, nasty behavior. Like, I think yeah. she's kind of an asshole, honestly. She's very, it made me realize yes. how very self-centered she is. Because, yeah.
like,
the
I know
world
she has
revolves-
a lot going on, but mm-hmm. so does everyone else.
Exactly, yeah. It's like the world revolves around her, and so her mood dictates everybody else and how she treats everybody. Yeah. It's just shitty Suki episode.
I kind of wish she just set up for the party and just didn't show up after. Like, mm-hmm. help Sam set up for it and then just stayed home. And, like, honestly,
if you're gonna kill the
Arlene
vibes,
would have been
then...
pissed, but yeah.
Yeah, or even say that, and, you know, Arlene would be pissed about this too if she was like, hey, like, I'm in a mood, I'm going to kill the vibes. Maybe Arlene would be a little bit upset, but probably feel less shitty about it than what happened, which is Suki showing up yeah. and being a jerk to everybody.
Yeah. She was being... a little cunty, I would say. I would go yeah. as far as saying that.
Yeah.
What else? So Tara gets her exorcism, which was a little bit different than Letty Mae's exorcism. Mm-hmm. I was really grossed out by the whole spit thing. I had forgotten about that. Like, spit in your hand
so
and
was
then
Tara.
Wipe on your face. Tara was... But she did it anyway. Mm-hmm. The vomit, I'm normally really, like, grossed out by vomit, and so when I see it, I think, I'm sure you saw yesterday, I told Melissa that this episode had vomit in it, because we, like, do trigger warnings for vomit.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't, like, as gross as I expected it to be, mostly because it wasn't, like, chunky, not to get into, like, vomit discourse.
But yeah, I think Ginger's vomit was worse from the previous
episode. Like anytime like a vampire's killed, like that's way grosser than a vomit, to be honest.
Yeah. I just have like one question about this exorcism. Yes. Why was it $799.95? Like, just make it $800, you fucking weirdo. Like, why? Yeah. What is that nickel?
Is it like you're acting like you're Walmart or something?
Yeah, like I don't understand. Like, is the nickel like a special like friends and family discount? Like, I don't understand it.
Back in the olden days, you used to buy a piece of candy on the way home from your exorcism, and it was 5 cents. Oh, my God. Yeah, that was really crazy. So Tara hallucinates a younger version of herself and then stabs that child, and then the knife that she's holding has blood on it. That was wild.
It's very like Game of Thrones, like you have to kill the child to let the man, you know, like.
It also felt very Luke Skywalker having to face his dad and like in Empire Strikes Back when Yoda's like makes him go into the forest and do his test or whatever. And then he sees his own face. Sorry to spoil Empire Strikes Back, everyone.
Spoiler
for a movie that's very old. After the exorcism, she comes back home to see her mom, and they kind of, neither of them really, like, get a sentence out. It's very...
So, what I appreciate about this is that the show is not like just doing a full 180 on Letty Mae. They're not going, oh, she stopped drinking and she got this like quote unquote exorcism. She's good now. Like we're getting all we're getting really is evidence that like alcohol or not, Letty Mae is a fundamentally selfish, shitty person. Because as Tara is like, oh, I got this exorcism, and you know, and her mom's like, oh, I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of you. And she's like, you are. Like, I honestly never thought that you were, that you cared about me or anything. And her mom goes, shh, I forgive you. Excuse
me. Like, she doesn't let her talk.
You forgive her? Like, and Tara is trying to have this moment of, like closure. Like, hey, like I didn't think that you cared about me like that. Like, listen. Listen to that. Like, you cut her off and then you forgive her? Fuck you. Fuck you forever. Yeah,
I don't think that Tara needs her forgiveness or, like, the child in this situation is not the person that wronged the other
person.
Letty
Mae should be on her hands and knees begging Tara for forgiveness, not the other way around. That's gross.
Yeah, and, like, last week she was making her the hoe cakes and all that, and it's just, like, you did think, okay, maybe she's turning it around, but you're, as you said, regardless of the alcohol, she's just a very selfish person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that continues to show as Tara drives her, you know, far away to get her like special thing that she wanted. And then, you know, Tara goes into the pharmacy. She finds Miss Jeanette. But when she comes back, the first thing her mom says is like, did you get me something? Like, did you get my thing? Like, just no awareness of like the change in Tara's vibe.
She has no clue that Tara's upset.
Mm-hmm. And just doesn't care because it's, you know, she's just a fundamentally selfish, shitty person.
I had forgotten that they found out about Miss Jeanette this soon after Tara's exorcism. Like, I didn't realize it was going to be in the same episode.
Yeah.
Clearly, because I didn't read the wiki summary.
No. Poor Tara only gets like 5 minutes of like.
Yeah.
Post exorcism.
Kind of. Joy.
Yeah.
I did actually like feel bad for Miss Jeanette as a person. Not like I don't think it's good that she's scamming people like about a religious exorcism, but I also feel that. You know, she has a lot of family to take care of.
Yeah.
And, like, people will do desperate things to feed their families. And I can't even get too mad about it.
Yeah, you can't really begrudge her. Like, And Tara doesn't either. You know, she doesn't press the issue once she hears all of that.
Yeah. But,
I mean, I think at the very least that Miss Jeanette owes Tara back her $799.95 because the exorcism didn't take. Like, keep.
Yeah. I mean, it was just money. Peyote anyway, basically. Yeah,
keep the money for Letty Mae because, you know what, that stuck. She's not drinking anymore. So that was money well. As shitty as she still is, that's still money well spent because she's not drinking.
Letty Mae believes it. So, exactly. Yeah, I agree with you. I don't remember if she ever tells her mom that it was fake. I don't think so.
But yeah, I don't recall. Yeah, completely
but either. I think if she does, it's like not for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she probably doesn't. But Tara reacts very poorly to this news, even though she's not like going to, you know, tell anybody about it. She gets drunk and basically she starts acting like her mother, basically.
Well, and she goes right back to her habits of pushing everybody away.
Just
kind of shitting on all of her relationships. And that's, I mean, I totally get Tara. I really understand this like grief, this pain that she's in, and like the instinct to want to push anybody away that tries to get close to you or that cares about you. So it's hard to watch. Poor Tara.
Yeah, I feel really, it was really hard to watch. I agree. It was also really hard to watch. I haven't seen a TV show where someone like, besides like Succession or something, where someone like drives that drunk. Like, that's just not something you see on television a lot anymore, I don't think. So that was pretty jarring compared to the rest, like just what I normally watch on television.
Yeah.
And we see her after the engagement party. She runs off the road because there's a naked woman in the road. And I'm like, oh, I know her. That's Michelle Forbes.
Yeah, she is somebody that we should look out for.
Yeah, so Michelle Forbes was also in Star Trek TNG as a character named Ro Laren, and she was awesome. And Michelle Forbes also, I just really like her. She's
very good
politics as far as like famous people or, you know, actors or whatever.
Yeah.
But I just really like her. She just seems really cool in general.
She's very, very talented.
Yeah. She's also in people might also know her from Battlestar Galactica. She was in a little bit of that.
All right. Shall we move on to Amy?
Amy, who I think is the Lydia Tarr of hippies. If you have not seen Tarr, basically, Amy thinks she's a good person. She goes and does white savior things to show how great she is, like go to other countries and help poor people. But she doesn't care about any other humans except for herself.
It's everything she does is extremely performative.
Yes, that's Lydia
including her relationship with Jason.
She loves slumming it. She thinks it makes her look down to earth. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a, yeah.
Yeah, it's all cosplay to her. She, the way that she plays Jason, and Jason, bless him, that fucking idiot, is just a prime piece of meat for puppeteering. And she is very good at manipulating and being that puppet master. And you really do get the feeling that she cares about Jason. She loves Jason, but you also definitely know that everything about what she's doing is a performance. So, like, her feelings might be genuine, but she's molding this entire relationship in the image she wants it to be in, and that is not an authentic relationship. Meanwhile, she's spouting all of these, like, hippy-dippy, like, oh, you know, our relationship is better than that. You know, withholding is tantamount to lying. You know, using all of these, like, you know, therapy jargon type of stuff to act like that she, you know, I don't know. She's just, I really hate her. And I think Eddie is really on to something with her, with him saying, like,
Eddie, like, has not been a vampire that long, but he reads her very well. Like, he's not, like, been around that long, but, like, I mean, she finds that Jason's been feeding him true blood, and she never tells Jason about this, so she's also withholding. But then
No, I was just gonna say Eddie, in his own right, is a great manipulator too, because he's a very good
observer
of humans. Exactly, like, he sees Amy for exactly what she is, but he also sees Jason for exactly what he is. So he knows how to kind of manipulate them against each other. I mean, he's doing it for good. Like, he is absolutely right to do that, and he's protecting himself. But, like.
Yeah, yeah. You should do anything in that situation if someone's holding you captive.
Yeah, exactly. And expose Amy for being a psychopath.
Exactly. So Amy does this whole thing where she's manipulating Jason to, like, stay on her path or whatever by saying, "Oh, you know, we're gonna go travel and live as a happy family with Eddie." And, like, I'm sitting here like, Jason, I love you, baby, but, like, you have to know that none of this makes sense. How are you gonna keep him in chains while you walk through the Louvre? Like, I don't exactly understand.
Like, how are you gonna fly? Like, he cannot go out into the sun. And and it's like Jason's worried about, like, the ethical implications of what they're doing to Eddie. Like, he may not be a human, but he's, like, a, you know, he's a sentient being, and what they're doing is like inhumane, but keeping him as a pet is just as inhumane. Like, that is not like,
I don't think that's Eddie's kink.
Right, intentionally trying to Stockholm syndrome him is not any more ethical than
I will say. I did laugh hysterically when Jason said Stockholm syndrome's like a disease, right?
Jason in that mirror too, like, you are sexier today than you were yesterday.
I mean,
a head empty,
that's
head
not empty. Untrue. I felt really bad for Lafayette because he is, like, freaking out that Eddie is missing. And he thinks it's, like, something
that the vampires are
what it actually is. Like, he thinks his life's in danger, when in truth it's obviously Eddie is a hole up at Jason's basement. It was really...
There was a moment...
No, you go first.
No, despite how I knew, because this is a rewatch, like, despite how I knew like that situation ended, I was really hoping that Lafayette would go and find, like, the Eddie's place, and, like, when he was like, Jason, you, like, stupid bitch or whatever he says, I was hoping that he would, like, confront, accuse Jason at least of, like, not giving away the secret, but, like, of actual kidnapping.
He doesn't think that Jason has that in him.
Yeah, no, and he doesn't.
And he wouldn't have. Yeah, exactly. He wouldn't have unless.
Well, that's another thing that Amy is doing really intelligently, is she's not revealing any of those things about herself to anyone but Jason. Like, Jason's the only one who knows what she's capable of. And even he's seeing it through, you know, rose-colored glasses. But, like, you know, she seems so, everyone's like, oh, you're too good for Jason. You're so blah, 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 blah. Everyone thinks the world of her because she's a very clever monster.
Yep. I fucking hate her.
Yeah.
I feel sad that we have to say goodbye to Steven Root in this episode. Jason tries to let Eddie go and Amy just stakes him, and it's just
so sad.
It's so sad.
Every time I see it, it's like, I want a different ending every single time. But it's so cruel.
It is. I just really like Steven Root as an actor, too. So it's always fun this first season when he pops up.
Well, and every interaction that Eddie and Jason have is so good because he... Like, I love that conversation they have about, like, what it means to be a man and, you know, Eddie's whole background and how, you know, he says that, you know, Jason lost his father and his grandfather at a young age, so nobody really taught him how to be a man, and he wishes he could be there for his son. And you kind of get this feeling like, oh, if they had a little bit more time, then they could have developed a really authentic, like, lovely relationship of, like, a mentor, like, a father figure for Jason, who wasn't like steeped in toxic masculinity, which is like exactly what Jason would need. And it's just, it makes it extra sad that they're robbed of that.
Yeah. Eddie was a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
I know we touched on Sookie being an asshole earlier. <Yeah. laughs> But I did really, once she was done being an asshole and she does go to get the ice at the party, I really enjoyed the scene in the bar where she's alone. The lights go out. It was fun, spooky.
Yeah.
Someone grabs her by the neck and you kind of see like their hair a little bit, but you don't see their face. And then there's one part where she's like hiding in the kitchen. It kind of reminded me of the raptor scene in Jurassic Park.
I thought the exact same thing. Yeah.
That's funny.
She
reads the mind of the person and he's like thinking about one of the other murders that he did. But it's interesting to me because that's all he's thinking about, or that's all that's coming out. And I just keep thinking like, I'm surprised. I mean, I know it's like for the plot, but I'm surprised that Sookie hasn't like, if it's someone who like might be a guest at the party or something like that. I mean, we don't know. Like, how has Sookie not already like heard a little bit about this in someone's brain?
Yeah. I mean, you definitely get the impression that like whoever this is somebody she knows. And if it's somebody she knows, right, she has presumably read their mind at some point.
Yeah.
So it feels like it must be intentional that this, we'll just say that's a guy because it's, you know, it's guy shaped, so we can make that assumption, that he's intentionally thinking only images. Or it also kind of makes sense that if he's, you know, kind of, because somebody who's doing those kinds of murders isn't necessarily thinking like an average person, non-murdering type person would be thinking.
Right, they might not be thinking about the murder unless they're actually doing it. Yeah,
or not thinking in linear thought, like words.
Right.
Because apparently that's the thing where some people don't have like an inner monologue. They only really think in images rather than words. So
yes, there's a lot of things at play there. I have a couple friends that think that way, and we were all surprised when we found out that we had different takes of thought. And it also could be someone that knows her abilities and
exactly
is just being extra careful around her,
right, being intentionally opaque. So
exactly.
And when they're hopped up on the potential murder that they're about to commit, they're probably thinking back on that first murder going like, this is what I'm thinking about, this is what's driving me.
Exactly. I did feel like that bit was like a fun like horror scene.
It was, liked. We haven't gotten like a ton of spookiness lately out of the show, so it's fun to get a little bit back.
It definitely stood out because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the last big thing that happens is Bill's punishment for killing Long Shadow. So Bill has to go to this tribunal in front of the local magister, who I forget the actor's name, but I love him. He was in 24. He's in a bunch of other things. His name
great character is actor.
His name is like something that's very Eastern European Russian sounding, so I just cannot pronounce it. But one thing I didn't realize before watching it this time, that the magister says, you know, I was trained during the Inquisition. I had either forgotten about that or not registered it when I first watched this. But it's interesting because back in that time, my family actually left Portugal or Spain. We're not 100% sure like what part. During the Inquisition, because they were Jewish, and so they moved to I think it might have been Turkey at the time, but by the time they left, it was Greece. Like it had changed, that the border had changed.
Oh wow!
And then came to Brooklyn. But it's just interesting because the way he talks about humans is so cold, and like they're only here to serve us, and it just felt like someone that would be involved in some sort of previous genocide.
Yeah, that felt very an appropriate character detail for him to,
yeah,
you know, agree. Be in this position of judgment and like,
yes,
to have that background, yeah, makes a lot of sense. I also think, mm-hmm, it's really interesting. Like, we're getting a little bit more, like a few more pieces to like the vampire culture puzzle. So like, and we know that exactly their, that like Eric is Bill's boss because Eric is a sheriff, and so now we know that Eric, yes, is a sheriff of Area 5, and then we have this magister who is like responsible for, you know, this wide kind of area that he's responsible for, like, right, being judge, jury, executioner. And it's just interesting, we're getting, and we know there are higher ups from him, so like,
yeah,
I'm curious, for sure. I'm ready to like dig into the vampire culture, vampire, yeah, government, how they govern themselves.
Yeah, and I know we get more of that next season, which, mm-hmm, I'm very excited about.
Yeah, it'll be fun to get back into that stuff.
I did find it really interesting that when Bill was trying, Eric's just so much, whew, when Bill is trying to defend himself, he was saying Sookie was only there because Eric asked her to be there. She's very valuable to us. And like, the magister could not give a shit about any of that. But until Bill was like, well, also Longshadow was stealing from Eric and ruining his business, that the magister was like, well, that's a grave offense. Mm-hmm. I actually giggled at that. Like, that he doesn't care about the human, but like the business deal is like a step too far. Yeah.
It's like that quote from Community where God, what is her name in Community? I don't know. Jillian,
Britta,
thank you.
Yeah, Britta.
Where Britta is like, I can excuse racism, but I draw the line at animal cruelty.
Oh my God, there's so many white people that act that way too.
Yeah. that's this guy. Like, I can excuse yes, human murder, but I draw the line at stealing extortion. Or
oh my God, that's so funny. Hold on. So the usual punishment for what Bill did, which was kill Longshadow, killing another vampire, would be 5 years in the coffin, wrapped in silver chains. But the magister is feeling creative and decided instead of doing that, Bill owes them a life instead. And I'm like, you know what? The circumstances of this are not great, but it makes complete sense to me.
It makes way more sense than isolation, like a life, yeah, for a life. That makes total sense to me. And I do have questions about this, like, isolation with the silver chains thing, because they, yeah, show a coffin that's wrapped in silver chains. So presumably they would be, yeah, sticking Bill in there, closing the lid, wrapping it in silver, but like, if the silver's not touching him,
yeah, that part is that? I wonder if there's like silver on him inside, yeah, and like there would have top. To that be, is right? What I envision, because I'm like, otherwise
if he can
just punch a hole in it and like separate, right, it without touching it too much,
and if he has the strength to destroy like a trailer in the woods and make it look like a tornado, then, right, he's got the strength to bust his ass out of a coffin, a wooden coffin.
Yeah.
And have nothing to do with the silver.
That he's, yeah, I have a feeling in my mind, he's like mummified with the silver in, mm-hmm, the coffin, and then there's more silver on top.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Which seems really silly, because then you could potentially lose two vampire lives.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, if he doesn't ever get out of there. Like, he might die.
Well, the magister says that, like, insanity is a very likely side effect.
Yeah. And
what you can't do, so, like, when they're trying to assimilate into human culture, or human society, you can't have an ungovernable vampire running, right, around doing whatever he wants.
It makes me think that, in my headcanon, they end up keeping those people locked up and like let them out for like, oh, we need to kill these people over here, get the crazy guy, like that, mm-hmm, they would use them like as like a weapon
of mass destruction, vampire, yeah, exactly, of mass destruction.
So they bring a cute redhead named Jessica out, and Bill is supposed to make her into a vampire. She is like 16 or 17. I don't remember how old
she is. I think she's 17.
She's a minor. Mm-hmm. She's a Christian. This is the first time she snuck out of her house in her entire life. And this is what happens.
Yeah, and you already get the sense that her life is, like, extremely rigid. Her parents are maybe not very understanding. Mm-hmm. She talks about she's only allowed to go to, like, youth choir and prayer group. And she's got this, you know, so in the first time she tries to show a little bit of a freedom or of independence, she gets this, which is not great. And poor thing is just, like, praying up a storm.
Yeah, and you could see Bill feels for her because, mm-hmm. I mean, he had children. He also is not allowed to glamour her. So, like, she has to be very conscious of everything mm-hmm. that's happening to her. And she's screaming and crying to be let free. It was really hard to watch, even though I love Jessica.
I know. I'm very excited for Vampire Jessica because I adore her.
Me too.
And also this scene was just, like, doing the most, and yes, I love it.
Everyone's bangs popping out.
Yeah, it's very, like, it's drama. It's, like, gothic camp. Yeah. It's
basically they all got teeth boners, basically.
Yeah, and Bill is, like, howling at the moon while he does it. He's like, just roaring to the skies. It's the most. It's a lot of fun. I was just, like, giggling.
I really liked it too. It was just, and there were so many vampires there. I was trying to see if any of them looked like actors I recognized.
Yeah. I know it's fun to watch, like, an older show years later and be like, oh, you're famous now. Like, you know.
Yeah.
You were in here back
my
when.
Mom watches Midsummer Murders, like the British. It's like a mystery show. And, like, from earlier, there's one episode in an earlier season that has Stephen Moyer, Orlando Bloom, and Henry Cavill. They're like, I think all three of them are in the same episode, and they all look like babies, and it's just God. Like so wild to watch.
It's adorable.
they all look better now, though, I think.
I don't know. I'm still very fond of, like, my first Henry Cavill was The Tudors, and that was, like,
oh yeah, that's fair. That I didn't watch that
formative.
Later,
so. Yeah, that was formative Henry Cavill.
Yeah, so
for
this
me.
Was pre The Tudors for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I just recently rewatched The Man from U.N.C.L.E., and I was just like, you're very pretty.
He is, yeah.
The movie, not the TV show.
Not the, I find him very sus as a person, but he is.
Yeah.
Not,
oh, yeah, no.
Not hard to look at.
He's not as bad as his co-star in that movie.
Yeah, I know.
Armie Hammer, but that's another podcast.
Yeah. Oh my God, what would that podcast even be? Anyway, come on.
I don't know.
I am, like, on tangents, it would be like, today.
It's fine. I am very open to tangents, so I enable them. I think that's part of it. I feel like we were so excited. We, like, got through all of that very quickly.
We did. We were, like, I mean, we're talking about True Blood as a show being, like, having all this momentum, but.
Yeah, and we're like, boop, 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 boop.
Yep.
Yeah. Do you want to rank the cliffhanger?
I do.
Or actually, before we get to that, I just wanted to say, and I didn't know if you had anything to say about the episode in general, Hoyt was fucking adorable in this episode. I know he's in, like, one scene, but, like, his face was so cute. I have a little crush on him.
He's such a sweet little baby.
I know.
And so is Terry.
I agree.
Yeah, like the two most Terry's wholesome so good boys in this show.
I know. When Tessa and I were talking about Terry last night, because last night she just realized, I don't know if you watched Gilmore Girls, but that he was in Gilmore Girls, the actor that plays Terry. And I was like, you didn't realize?
I watched, like, a couple of seasons of Gilmore Girls. I don't remember him.
Oh, so you might not have gotten this far, but, like, he ends up, like, with Lane.
I do remember. Okay, I do know that.
Yeah. Lane's storyline's terrible, but that's also another podcast. if you want to take the reins on this, I agree with your with your choice.
Perfect. So I was thinking of so that the cliffhanger, quote unquote cliffhanger, is Bill feeding on Jessica, howling at the moon, doing his thing. And I think for the pure like fun and camp and drama of it, that it belongs as the new number six. So it would be after the Long Shadow attacking Sookie scene, but before mm-hmm. Sookie shows up at Bill's. I think that's a good spot for it.
Yeah, I agree with you. It was more fun than Liam and his weird eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awesome. We didn't really have any, I mean, we do have the one character that was naked at the end that was a new character, but we don't know anything about that person yet. So I will just leave that for another time. What would you say was the most chaotic for you?
It was, like, I keep harping on this, but it was Bill changing Jessica or biting Jessica and then, like, roaring into the sky with, like, a crowd of turned-on vampires. It's a scene that is doing just the absolute most, and I love it.
That's awesome. Mine is definitely Amy being a psycho. her whole, like, speech that she gave Eddie, like, about how her carbon footprint is minuscule. It honestly made me want to stake her. So I was like, this is like some psycho shit. Like, what is really Eddie supposed to care about any of this?
I know. And her like lack of self-awareness is just.
Yeah.
She's. Did you ever watch Crazy Ex-Girlfriend?
I only saw like half of the first season.
Oh, yeah. You were part of that watch for a little while, right?
Yeah. I kind of just fell off of it.
So I think.
I'm not good at watches like that with like a million people.
You probably got to this part though where like Rebecca has her song that's like I'm a good person.
Yes.
Yeah, that's Amy.
Yeah. Oh god, Amy. What was the most horny for you?
That was and this isn't like good horny, this is like cringe horny.
Right.
This is Amy thinking and like stop, like Jason's literally about to put it in, you know what I mean? And Amy's like, wait, and she looks over at Eddie and like thanks him for his contribution, I guess, of his blood. And then she and Jason go on to like, he's like, fuck you, obviously. And then she's like, oh, ignore him. And then just they proceed to have sex right next to Eddie. It's while high on his blood. It is.
Yeah.
It was a contender for most chaotic for me, but I decided it belonged here in horny. So.
It's so funny to me. Jason is like telling Eddie how he's never felt this way about a woman before. And I'm like, dude, you're just high with her. Like, this is not real. on drugs.
They have nothing in common outside of their mutual love for V.
Yeah. Completely. Mine was more horny cute. I picked Arlene because she's at her engagement party and she's cute and dancing with Renee and she's just really excited to get married and talking about how happy she is that Renee is going to be there for her kids and everything. And I was like, you know, they went home and had some nice sex after this party.
I don't always love Arlene, but I really love her in this episode. This is a great Arlene episode.
Yeah, Arlene can be very judgmental and say the wrong thing, but, like, as a character, I really enjoy her a lot.
Yeah.
So, I didn't get to finish re-listening to the chapters that were relating to this part of the show, but there are some things that happened in this episode that made me think of future things, and if you have not watched the show and don't want to be spoiled, I would say we'll catch you next time, or you can move ahead a little bit until you hear us telling you how you can find us on the internet. So Sam, when asked by Sookie, like, can you turn into a human? He says humans are too complex to shift into, but that's not really the whole story. We get more of this in later seasons, but some shifters can shift into humans, but it's like completely frowned upon and fucked up. And like, I guess I also think makes you sick a little bit. I don't remember the symptoms of it, but it was just.
Which is good because that kind of ability needs those
restrictions.
Yeah. Otherwise it's like the ethical ramifications are too much to contemplate.
Yeah, I feel like it's really common to, like, what we're dealing with now with AI and, like, deepfake things on the internet. Like, you can, like, fake someone's voice. It's funny because, not funny, but, like, there was an episode, the episode I recorded on my other podcast this past weekend, someone faked a voice. And, like, it's just, it's very science fiction-y.
And we're living in that science fiction future now.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. It's a lot, and it's not great.
Yeah.
Sorry, I think my upstairs neighbors are, like, moving furniture across the place. They're so loud all the time.
I heard it a little bit, but it's fine. Our listeners will think it's charming because I do. And it's, no one has any control over it, so it's all good. The naked woman that Tara sees at the end is, we know her as Marianne. She's, like, basically the big, one of the big bads, because there's a couple different things that happen next season, too, of the next season. And I know I said this already, but I'm so excited for her. I love her in this show, and I loved her in Star Trek.
Yeah, I am so excited for the Marianne stuff, because genuinely, I find her entire plot in season two and her in general in season two genuinely scary.
Like, yeah, I
genuinely
agree with that.
Like, not even campy scary, genuinely scary. It's going to be really fun to dig into that. And I like how early they're seeding that stuff. Like, I wasn't expecting it to be that
early. She showed up earlier than I expected.
Mm-hmm. And, like, the caginess of Sam's background, and, like, we know what that's leading to.
I forgot that they had a connection, to be honest, until I saw your notes. And I really would have – I vaguely remember how, like, the season finale of the the last cliffhanger of the show – of the season. I vaguely remember what that is. Mm-hmm. But I – if you had asked me, I would have thought that the scene in – that we saw at the end of this – with Marianne, it would have been in the finale. Like, I forgot that it happened right now.
Yeah, me too. Because we still have, two more episodes until we're done?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I feel like this part I already talked about, so I'm not going to talk about that again. I know I said, like, my top horny thing was Arlene, but at the same time, like, knowing how this season ends, I just feel so bad for her.
It is so sad. And, like, in retrospect, because I remember the revelation of, like, who the killer is being very, like, shocking to me when I first watched it. But in retrospect, they set it up so hardcore with Arlene sitting there. You never trust it when somebody sits there and talks about how happy they are and how safe and secure that they feel because of Renee. Like, you cannot trust that. You know they're going to rip that happiness away from her as soon as possible.
Oh, totally. And it's so funny because I've been paying it. Like, I always remember who the murderer in season one is. Like, that's, like, one of the things I don't forget. And so from the beginning of the season, I've been, like, watching him very carefully.
Yeah.
And it's, like, really, like, he just pops up sometimes, and it's all very interesting.
It's very subtle. He did a good job. All the Renee stuff. Yep. And I think it comes together really well.
Yeah, I agree.
Awesome. All right, did we do it?
We did it. Woohoo!
Good job, us.
Woohoo! Where can folks find you online?
You can find me on Instagram and other places at Ragey Cakes, and you can find my YA/whatever we feel like podcast at Actia Age.
They just did an episode which I have yet to listen to, but it's on the Red, White, and Royal Blue movie that I have queued up and I'm very excited about.
You haven't watched it yet?
No, I watched it. I haven't listened to your episode.
Oh, the episode. Yet. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you said that.
Yeah,
I was gonna say, oh my god,
queued up. Yeah, Tessa and I watched it a couple weeks ago. I don't remember if it was a Saturday after it came out.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Very fun.
She hasn't read the book, so I'm trying to get her to read the book.
Oh yeah.
Because I have it on my Kindle. I'm like, just go borrow my Kindle.
It's worth
it. You can find me on Twitter, Letterboxd, and Storygraph at chicken_tendi. That's TENDI. You can find me on Blue Sky at chicken tendi. You can find my other podcast, Pod Wraiths, a Deep Space Nine podcast, on Twitter, Letterboxd. Nope. You can find my other podcast, Pod Wraiths, a Deep Space Nine podcast, on Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Pod Wraiths, PODWRAITHS. Thank you very much to DJ Empirical for our theme song. You could find this podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky at FangBangersPod. That's bangers with a Z. And email us your chaotic, horny thoughts on True Blood only, please, to FangBangersPod@gmail.com. Next week, we'll cover the episode To Love is to Bury. Until then, I'm Elise, and my blood type is Hoyt talking back to his annoying mother.
Hell yeah. I'm Tasia, and my blood type is naked strolls with my pig.
Bye.
Bye.